Hey, Low Code Approach listeners, this is Wendy Haddad. Before we jump into this week's episode, I wanted to let you know that we are starting to plan for the next season, and we want to make sure we hear from you on what is most important and relevant in terms of the topics that we'll be choosing. So if you could open a web browser and pop over to aka.ms/low-code-topic-request, that's aka.ms/low-code-topic-request, all one word. Fill out that brief survey on what topics and what subjects, what guests you might want to hear from. And who knows, maybe it'll make it into the next season of the podcast. Thanks so much and happy listening.
Hey everybody, welcome to a new episode of The Low Code Approach. I am Sean Feeney, a Senior Product Marketing Manager for the Power Platform team, and I'm joined by...
I'm Wendy Haddad. I'm a Senior Cloud Solution Architect, Delivery Lead, and a former customer of Microsoft, and I'm joined by...
Make governance flow like water. My name is Ken Aguilar. Sean, please do not forget to sweep the leg as you introduce our guests for today.
Wow. Well, today we'll be waxing on, or maybe waxing off, about Dataverse with James Olenek, Partner PM Director for Dataverse. How you doing today, James?
Doing great.
Thank you for the energy on that. I appreciate it. So today we're going to talk a little bit about Dataverse and what does that mean for modern enterprise solutions, specifically around AI, right? And when we talk about AI, we talk about Copilot and how that works with the Power Platform stack. So James, I think the first question I'm going to pass off to you, also I'd appreciate if you go into your role a little bit more, but like, can you explain how does Microsoft Dataverse enable organizations to build AI-enabled solutions? So like, what's the tie-in to Copilot and Microsoft Dataverse?
Well, thank you for having me today. My name is James Olenek. I am the Mr. Miyagi of data and AI with the Power Platform to continue with the theme here. So I lead the product team that helps build our AI and data platform capabilities for Power Platform. So that includes Dataverse, AI Builder, our 1,200 plus Power Platform connectors to third-party systems. And so we support a lot of capabilities, both data and AI, across Power Apps, Power Automate, Power Pages, and then very recently, Copilot Studio and building generative applications. And so I guess to answer your second question, Dataverse and kind of AI Builder, this platform, we are that enterprise-grade, low-code AI data platform that manages your data and business logic across the cloud. And so there's a couple different aspects of that. One part of it is, how do we enable any developer to kind of build from their data up, right? So every generative application going forward, I believe, will start with data, and it'll build on top of that, especially with kind of the fabric of what is an app being redefined, right? And the fact that generative AI and these large language models can really support very dynamic and fluid applications. But the data and the business process still remains, the logic around it still remains. So a lot of what my team has been focused on is building on our learnings from being a data and AI platform for low-code applications, and how do we transition that into a world where everyone is building these generative applications, which is a much more dynamic experience. And honestly, will be integrated, and if you're seeing what's happening with Microsoft Copilot, applications can surface through way more channels than ever before. You don't just build an app for just one surface. It'll be seamlessly woven across Teams, Outlook, their own website, and in a more seamless fashion than was ever possible before. So I'm happy to be here today. So thank you for having me.
So James, the world has changed so much in the last year and a half with AI and artificial intelligence. I think that a lot of our Power Platform admins only thought of AI originally in the Power Platform context as AI Builder. And now we have so much more and we're putting it in every product. And so within your realm, with AI Builder, with Dataverse, where is there maybe an overlap? Where is there maybe a difference? Can you help us understand, when we say AI, some of the examples of where this is all fitting in?
Yeah, so good question. If you look at AI Builder just really quickly, right? AI Builder over the past 3 years has been how we've brought what we call the kind of maybe the classic machine learning models and made them approachable for low code. And more classic approach to data science and AI models meant that you built a purpose-built model for a purpose-built problem. So if I'm processing documents, I have to train a model on the type of documents I'm processing, right? And I to get a good output that I want, and I need to retrain that and manage it. And, you know, there was teams that had to do this. And even for conversational bots, you can think of it as what Power Virtual Agents was when it first launched on our platform. You had to tell the bot all the topics, and you need to have a good sense of what everyone's going to ask in order to get a good outcome. And we've been building low-code tools, both AI Builder and PVA, for 3 to 4 years that allowed people to build those types of solutions in a low-code way. But you had to be very imperative. You had to know exactly what people were going to want, the types of documents they were going to provide, the types of questions they were going to ask to get a good outcome. So I think the biggest change now is with these large language models, you don't have to train a model for document processing. There's enough general knowledge that's been essentially compiled into the probabilities of these large language models that it can do a pretty good job out of the box. I don't have to go train a bunch of models and collect a bunch of sample documents and retrain it. I can take these general models and I can give them hints, what a lot of people call prompt engineering, around what I want, right? And I can get the outcome out that I want for the type of problem I'm trying to solve. And so where these collide with AI Builder and Dataverse is the fact that AI Builder is our low-code AI building and AI interface. And what we just introduced with our prompt builder and it went GA in November is the ability to, the same way you can interact with those pre-trained models, you can do that with these generative models as well. You have GPT 3.5 today. We're going to be launching GPT 4 in a month. And where these collide is we believe, and we're seeing the fact that these large language models are almost these extremely powerful AI functions that are general purpose. And if you combine them with the data of your business model, they can be very, very accurate. So for example, that document processing example, where you had to train a model on a bunch of your documents to get the output you want. Well, now all you need to do is you need to use the GPT model. You need to point it at your documents that are already stored in your system record. It might be Dataverse, it might be a connector. And that alone, so essentially good examples of the type of documents that you're looking to generate or the output you want is enough. And you don't have to have this huge life cycle of training everything and retraining it and testing it. The model, the general model is good enough if it has connectivity to your enterprise data, right, to be used in an enterprise application. So before these were kind of separate worlds, you had to like care about training models and then you connected your data and you pieced it all together. But going forward, the training of the model is less important. It's these large language models that are already pre-trained. And then if you can ground it in your enterprise data, you can get equal, if not better, outcomes with far less overhead. And so that's where these worlds are collided. And I think it just lowers the bar even more for people to integrate these kind of generative models, these large language models, into any solution that they want to go build.
So a quick follow-up question on that. Why would we still choose AI Builder? Our company still choose AI Builder then? If we have the ability to use these generative models and it's less effort to get to our solution, does that mean that there is maybe not a future for AI Builder, or is AI Builder going to evolve?
I think the answer is that not every business user or developer wants to spin up an Azure OpenAI subscription. Not every business user wants to understand all the different building blocks and tools to put this together. I think AI Builder will evolve into just being that prompt building experience that is available to you if you're building a copilot, if you're building an app, if you're building automation. It's just how you do prompt building, how you do grounding with your enterprise data, how you integrate these large language models as functions and generative capabilities into an app. And the same reason why you would choose AI Builder is the same reason why you would choose low code as opposed to doing pro code is because it is far easier to build hundreds and thousands of these applications and manage them at scale with a managed platform than if you were to go have to build them all, put all the pieces together and manage it yourself, right? It's just that like the types of models, right? I think that you're going to see less of classically trained models for AI Builder. And it's more around enabling these very interesting prompt building that's capabilities and functions that are leveraging just the general model underneath the covers. I think it's still very, very valid. And it even, by the way, it even goes into the output format too. It's not just the processing of it. Like these models are very, very good at, even generating structured output. So for example, you can envision a world where it's not just text in, text out. It can be text in and JSON out. It can be text in and visual out. Like, and you can chain these things together. So all of a sudden, for example, rich visuals or rich experiences or rich media. And I think you're seeing a lot of this with some of the multimodal capabilities that are coming out. And I think what it means to kind of build business logic is going to evolve. It's going to change very, very rapidly because of kind of how powerful these models are. The biggest rub with all of these, though, to use them in an enterprise context, is that if you want to leverage them, like, and when I've done my own testing, is if you just have them be completely unbounded, you won't get the outcome you want. But if you can ground it in like your business data and kind of give them an input-output format, kind of constrain them a little bit more, then some really, really, really magic things can happen, right? And that's some of the things that we're working on, the Dataverse and AI Builder across these surfaces, to not only do that, but also bring it in a very low-code, no-code, approachable way. And so I'm really excited about 2024.
So, Sensei, please, if you will allow me to take a step back. You mentioned system of records. So we know today that Dataverse is excellent for integrating with Power Platform, across our entire stack. But when we think about modern enterprise solutions, many customers are still stuck on legacy enterprise solution. How does Dataverse now help with Copilot to integrate those older systems of record and now modernize their solutions? Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah. And first of all, when you're dealing with legacy or classic system of record, there's no easy solution. And anyone who's claiming there's an easy solution is lying to you. So says the sensei. But there are many things that we've done to try to make that easier, to try to reduce some of the friction that you might see. And so there are a couple different patterns. It's all built on the fact that we have a connectivity platform. So we have our connectors platform for Power Platform. So 1,200 out-of-box connectors, both Microsoft and external systems of record, so other vendors that are not Microsoft, the ability to create an interface, what we call a custom connector to any API, right? So that is the basis of everything. And we have the ability for people to leverage those connectors in a secure way, managed way, put policies on top of it, and trust away. The key thing that we've been doing is connecting that to Dataverse, right? At least Dataverse over the past time series that I've been on this team is it's been about like, hey, how do you define your business process, your relational model that your applications run on top of? And so, for example, if you have reference data, right, that's external, that, you know, doesn't change much, you can pull that into Dataverse. We have a couple different ways of doing that. People can use our kind of managed data flow option. A lot of people use vendors, for example, like KingswaySoft. We have the ability for people to build their own custom data flows, say, in Data Factory and leveraging our web API. So, for example, you can do extremely high scale upload of reference data, right, from a legacy system if you're trying to move away from it today. And many customers do that if they're trying to kind of replat. But many cases, you don't want to replat. Maybe you have some Oracle database and I'm not touching that thing. Like, it is what it is. It has a bunch of data, but I do need to pull from it and query from it at some time. And there's a couple different ways of doing that. So one of the things we've been doing is we've been supporting the ability to virtualize reference data. So for example, if you have data in a different system of record and you want to extend your business model that you defined within Dataverse, you can essentially extend that business model, which to data that's not living virtually using our connector framework. So for example, we had this with SharePoint and SQL, and we just launched it with Microsoft Fabric. So if, for example, I have a bunch of student information and I have a workflow around students and that data is mastered in Dataverse, that bunch of business processes on top of that. But say I have teacher recommendations, then that lives elsewhere. Well, what you can do is you can create a virtual table to that information in Dataverse using the connector approach, the same platform underneath the covers. And you can still have this relational model where students can be related to teacher recommendations. And we abstract that behind the scenes. So you still talk to it like it was the same data model, same APIs. And then we pull that data at runtime. We don't sync it in. It's actually all just metadata. And that's another technique that we have for doing that. The last thing that we've been doing very recently is the ability to build what we call low-code plugins. So think of these as if you're building synchronous business logic. So I want to distinguish this from, you know, asynchronous workflows like Flow, right, that might run offline. You know, you could be tracking approvals. They take a long time to run. But if you're building synchronous business logic, think of this as the equivalent of if you're building a Power app and you're triggering something and it's doing some logic, some of the PowerFX is running. What we've built is the ability to essentially run any PowerFX series of commands in Dataverse behind the scenes. And that can really do anything that PowerFX can do. It can call connectors as well. It's not about, not tied to the relational model of the business process, but you can do synchronous calls. You can essentially do custom logic, leveraging connectors as well, right? And we're going to bring this also, if you're familiar with what we've done with like formula columns, where you can do essentially custom calculated columns in Dataverse, like you can envision this tying into that. Long story short is we have this rich connector ecosystem. We spent the past 2 years bringing it into Dataverse. So if you have built your business model, there's various different mechanisms you can do to connect or extend that system of record, but have your business process still modeled in Dataverse. And we see a lot of people doing this because they only want to reference a part of that system of record, but they still want, you know, their core business process to be on the main platform, because that's where the majority of their problem, the majority of their apps and flows and automation are hanging off of.
And once it's in Dataverse, I'm assuming, James, even virtually, they can experience the richness and the goodness of all things within the platform, including things like Copilot.
There are limitations to virtual tables. I don't want to overpromise and underdeliver. Virtual tables are really nothing but a connection string, and they are metadata. So not everything unlocks for you. So for example, syncing data natively in, so the first approach I had, where if you use data flows, data factory, et cetera, that does have benefits. So for example, if you're looking to enable data for Dataverse search and the new kind of automated vector indexing we have for Copilot search, you do have to pull that natively in to Dataverse, because essentially we're doing that semantic and vector embedding automatically, so you don't have to. So that doesn't work if you just want to do vector embedding, but we have been doing a bunch of work to make it easy to pull in views of data. But if that data is highly changing, I would not recommend taking that approach. That approach makes sense if it's slower changing data, it's more reference data. And if you do want to enable that through, for example, you use like Copilot querying, it does make sense to pull it in, right? Because you do get more goodness out of it.
So James, we've talked a lot about Copilot and Dataverse, but I know there's been other advancements that have come out in the past 12 months, 6 to 8 to 12 months for Microsoft Dataverse, such as like natural language to table or Excel to table. Can you talk a little bit about how those features help organizations at enterprise scale move faster when building out their data platform?
Absolutely. Some of the things I've been most excited around is the fact that really my vision is that the business users that are trying to build solutions, these types of low-code solutions for their problems, they should not have to understand the intricacies of database design and business model. They should be able to describe, hey, I have this data, or I've been given access to this data by Dr. No, who trusts me, and I want to go get this outcome out of that data. I want to, you know, if I have, for example, I have this order data, and I want to improve my fulfillment for it, or I want to, maybe there's products in those orders and I want to have a better campaign around those products or a blog around those products, right? The biggest thing that I'm excited around is that should be enough. I shouldn't have to go through and have to be absolutely critical and design every single bit of my data model. I shouldn't have to go structure it. I shouldn't have to build every single piece of those business logic. And really that's been the past 8 years of low code is, we make it really easy for people to build data, business logic, view, but it's still almost like those classic model view controller apps, but it's just a very easy way for you to build it and anyone can do it. My perspective is that if you have data, like your enterprise systems, those aren't going away, and you tell us what you want, that should be enough. And so what's really exciting to me around what we've been doing with like, hey, describe the app you want, describe the data you want. Here, I have this Excel file, give me what I want, is that we're removing a lot of the barrier in the middle. It's like what you gave us is enough context, and then we fill in some of those gaps, right? And we can always fall back on the fact that we have all this ability to kind of configure all the knobs for you, but you can go from an Excel table to a Power App. You can go to a description to a prototype in a minute. And that is extremely powerful, not only for prototyping, but also for the productivity of the people that are building these solutions. And that's what I'm excited about. I'm excited about the fact that we've made those progresses around removing some of the interstitial steps, but I'm also even more excited that we're not done yet. We've just but scratched the potential of, you know, how easy it is to go from data to solution. And that's why 2024, I'm like really excited because I think where we are today, we're going to be miles ahead of it in 2024. Especially some of the things we're thinking about doing right now is the same way we went from description or table to kind of classic Power App. Think about going from data or Excel table to Copilot app, and not just Copilot app that maybe indexes that file and allows you to do Q&A over it, but envision it. I have uploaded this Excel file around my orders. I get a Copilot around that, and that order is persistent. Now that Copilot is actually helping me and running orders on top of it. And so that to me is what really excites me, is like we've just started and it's what we build is helping a lot of people, but there's so much more potential that we have.
So natural language to table or Excel to table, right, will build one table for you. Is there any chance that it can actually build multiple relationship or relational tables for you in the future? Is that on the roadmap?
Yes, it'll be coming in the next 3 months.
Awesome. Thank you. Wendy, to you.
We love that. All right. So I have to slip in a good solid plug for governance for my good friend Ken here. So James, we have permissions in Dataverse, and it can get very confusing and very convoluted to manage that at scale. So what are we doing to hopefully make it easier for people to manage those permissions at scale and security at scale too?
Yes, this is a very, very vast topic. And so I think there's maybe two angles to it. One is there's a lot of flexibility in security. And so for more advanced scenarios, IT departments that are building their whole CRM or ERP system, we have a lot of tools and you have the ability to go super deep. So I think there's two things we need to do. One, for maybe that the business user or the low code rebel who's making, you know, their own applications, we're working on not having to expose all of that complexity for you on day one. Actually, we're looking at taking some of the good kind of security patterns that we introduced for Dataverse for Teams, where you don't have to worry about a billion different roles. It's more around there's specific types of roles, admin, user, app user, and we will be creating some of the roles automatically for you. So you built the app, you selected the data, you should be able to choose a couple different roles when you share it to someone, and we should be able to create some of those automatically and choose the right permissions based on what you've done. So that's the first thing that we're doing. And that's more for, again, that low-code maker, that business user doesn't need to know about all those, you know, the hundreds and hundreds of permissions that we have. That's the first thing. The second thing that we're thinking about doing is for, you know, the admin or the person in IT that might be managing permissions, and there might be a lot of apps, there might be advanced apps. Turns out in some of our investigations, large language models can actually help with understanding these permissions, right? And so I don't want to call it like security copilot, but there's almost, I think we're thinking through how do we kind of bring almost an easy way of answering questions like, Wendy is a user in my work, what permissions does Wendy have access to? Or when I want to go give Ken access to some data in my environment, what permissions or roles should I give him access to? We're actually thinking through how we can make that an easier experience as opposed to making, you know, the person in this scenario, that IT person, that sysadmin, have to like rake through every single permission and role. And how do we give a better experience for admins to kind of do that? Maybe not fully conversationally, but maybe leveraging some of the capabilities we have underneath the cover. So actually in the next 6 months, like we're going to both advance this for the business user has to worry less around configuring every permission and just kind of outlines the type of permission on the underlying data they want when they're building apps and automation on top of data in the platform. And then also for admins, how do we make it easier for them to sift through all the permissions that might be available to kind of really get to the outcome they want, right? Which is, you know, minimizing how much access people have, giving people the right level of access, but not over permissioning from the administrative surfaces as well.
So James, thanks for the information there. One of the things I think that customers may have seen within the release wave is we are now going to be creating some of these new security hubs. It's out on the internet. It's in our release wave video. Can you maybe talk about how we will now be potentially visualizing some of the data inside of the security hub, like maybe the permission hubs are and so on?
Yeah, I think it's probably like the worst. It's like the best secret that we keep is that we have so many different knobs that actually enable companies to have very granular security. But, you know, the bad part of that secret is that we have so many knobs and you have to know where to go turn them, right? And they're in different locations. But I think the key thing that we're doing with Security Hub, right, is we're going to be launching an experience in the next 3 months where it doesn't launch you off to a bunch of different locations. You can go to an environment, say in our admin center, and you can see, oh, like I need to go to improve my risk. So to turn these risk factors into a more trusted environment, I need to go do X, Y, and Z. And you'll be able to go do it from that single place.
More like, here's the spot for the job to be done. It's a security focus area.
That's right. It's also going to be an area that security is not a one-time thing. You don't set it and forget it, okay? Because there are always more solutions. There are always more capabilities we're launching. But the idea is that you can go to one place and I can go and turn on this policy. I can go enable this encryption. I can go, you know, add this type of audit logging. I can go and enable this type of network integration to kind of essentially add a network layer around it. I can go do that one place. Those jobs to be done that essentially decrease your risk profile. You don't have to go hunting as a customer of our platform in our release wave documentation, in our even our public documentation to know what knobs to go turn. You can go to Security Hub and it tells you what knobs you should go turn based on what you have in that environment, the type of data, the type of applications you build. So I'm actually really excited about it. I think in many cases, Security Hub will start even in an admin persona, but I think we will probably end up bringing this even to the developers themselves. Maybe not everything is applicable, but there is a lot of onus on the people building solutions, especially if they're building over systems of record, which is they have to understand the security of these capabilities. The onus is not always on the admin a month later to go clean things up. And so we're going to launch it first, I think, for more of the admin and the IT persona. But then I think the idea is like, if we get good feedback on this, we might bring a lot of these patterns into the other parts of the product as well.
So James, I may have some ideas about how to delegate those things. We can talk later, you and I.
Sounds great. Are we on a podcast or a product review?
I think we're...
I think that's a cliffhanger that we're going to have to end this episode on before we jump into a probably security-dedicated Dataverse episode. James, I'd just like to say you're the best around. Thank you for joining the podcast. I really, really appreciate it. Look forward to having you back on again, hopefully, or maybe around the build timeframe to discuss some great things that are going on in the Dataverse world.
I'm already looking forward to it.
Sweet. Well, thank you so much again. Really appreciate your time. When you can, you guys are the best. And let's meet up again.
Have a great day.